Welcome to Traveling Culturati, where we explore cultures and share travel news, travel tips, destinations, and travel chats. Visit TravelingCulturati.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Make sure you head on over to the website, TravelingCulturati.com, and make sure you join that travel club. We have Japan coming up. It is very soon, right around the corner, and it is sold out, but we still have space available for Peru that's coming up August 15th through the 25th. So make sure you not only join the travel club, but sign up for the newsletter so you'll be the first to know when we're on the go. So I definitely want to welcome you back to another week of travel news, travel tips, and travel chats. Today, executive producer and co-owner of Advantage International, Gene Harley, joins me for travel news and today's hot topic of places that are here today but may be gone tomorrow, or at least by 2050. Some as early as 2035, but we're going to tell you all about it today. We'll also have Javon's Travel Minute and the Culture Report, but first up is some travel news. Hello, Gene, and welcome back. Thanks for joining me for some travel news.
Thank you, Javon. It's good to be back.
Yeah, well, you know, this is what we do every day, and we talk about travel news every day, and we certainly love to share what's coming up, what's new, what's happening in the world of travel. And there's some great news on the horizon that could be happening very, very soon. And that is the Biden administration making the airlines pay up.
Yeah, finally, it's coming to that. The Biden administration on Wednesday of this week announced two new rules for airlines and its year-long war against junk fees. And these are the extra fees that basically airlines have put forth that you end up paying for luggage, for Wi-Fi, for all these different things going on. The first new regulation mandates that carriers issue full cash refunds automatically instead of the response that customers request their flights when they're canceled or changes come in or baggage is returned late or anything like that. Even Wi-Fi charges don't take place. The 11 largest U.S. passenger airlines issued $43 billion in customer refunds, $900 million per month from January 20th to December 2023. In addition to issuing other forms of compensation, Airlines for America, A4A, the lobby group for the North American airline industry, said in a statement. But consistently, it's been a situation where the airlines just basically would give you vouchers instead of just giving you your cash back.
That's a very interesting thing. So it's kind of like, okay, the flight is canceled or delayed, especially when you're talking about a mechanical or something that the airline caused, like overbooking or something like that, they're still putting the onus on you ask for or to submit for a refund. And sometimes they come in vouchers or that they'll offer you vouchers in replace of. But sometimes if it's a delayed or a cancellation, they're like, well, we can rebook you. But they're really putting all of that onus on the traveler. And so this is a great move in saying, no, this has to happen automatically, and not just for your ticket purchase for the flight or for those delays or cancellations that may occur, but also, as you mentioned, for example, lost bags, all of these things, rather than you having to file that, well, you'll probably still have to file a claim, but rather than them just kind of waiting for you to do all of the work before they'll say, well, okay, we'll give you a refund.
Well, the Department of Transportation called it one thing. It says they make you jump through hoops. You have to go on the phone, you have to fill out forms, you have to wait in line, and then to be given a voucher or even mile credit. I mean, who knows what 5,000 bonus miles means? It could be worth $50 and you're out $400. They got over $100 billion a year in these fees. Most of them are non-taxable. You should be able to get back in payment, the exact same form of payment that you made. If it was a credit card, $400 back on my credit card. You shouldn't have to ask and beg and jump through hoops.
Well, the new rules will be rolled out on timelines ranging from 6 months to 2 years. And 6 months to 2 years, that's actually kind of fast when you're talking about the government and the airlines, right? 6 months to 2 years that we can start seeing this roll out. and some more changes may be coming down the pike. However, this particular one, I hope other airports don't hop on board this one. There's a proposed bill from California's lawmakers that's looking to crack down on services like Clear, and they're calling them airport line jumpers and saying that this is basically for the more affluent traveler. I kind of beg to differ with that, that they're able to jump in line ahead of everyone else because they have Clear. What's your thought on that?
Well, this is where it becomes news and comment, because my comment on this is that none of it makes any sense. You're proposing a law to eliminate priority service for Clear. This is from a state legislature where state and federal legislators get priority service and parking and everything else, but they want to say $189 fee, which in most cases is covered by credit cards and other things like that, is keeping somebody who's buying an airline ticket with the average low price of $270 for $189 a year to have that priority. And they're also screened. Clear is a concierge screening service to allow you to go up ahead of the line, but you still have to do an optical or thumbs or whatever, your fingerprint screening. And to say that, even though the legislature is saying that they just want them to have a separate line so they don't get pushed in front of others who are already in line, I don't see it. You and I both use it, but we also use TSA PreCheck, which gets you moved up too.
I know that these come at a fee. And so the argument here is that it's for affluent travelers who can afford to pay for it. Mm-hmm. It's not a fee that you pay every single time you travel. It's an annual fee that you pay. And I think more than it being something that someone else can just afford over others, it's more of frequent travelers,
that's
business
right.
travelers.
That's right.
And that's certainly why we use it, because we're frequent travelers. And so don't really see it as jumping the line, because we also have to go through background and security checks and those things. But the bill is sponsored by State Senator Josh Newman, a Democrat who represents the 29th Senate District. And the bill is the SB 1372, and it would require that third-party vendors like Clear would have to get their own dedicated security lanes separate from the ones used by general travelers. And the bill would apply to new agreements between public airports and third-party security services after January 1, 2025. Again, that's not too far away. So they're not saying that Clear cannot exist, but they're saying that they would have to get their own lanes so that there isn't the, in their words, line jumpers.
That's right.
I wonder if this particular senator was standing in line and did not have Clear and saw someone else go ahead of him.
Yeah, that's an interesting aspect. And that's interesting. You wonder if that was what drove it, or maybe his constituency. But, you know, travel is for the affluent in a sense. I mean, if you can afford an airline ticket of $200, $300 and you're traveling more than a few times a year, I'm pretty sure you'll find Clear as being beneficial at $189.
Yes. Well, let's see how that one plays out. It's a bill. And remember,
and
the
only
bill,
a bill
sitting on Capitol
Hill.
Hill.
There you go. On the state legislature. What is that? Sacramento, right?
Yeah. So airline prices, ticket mm-hmm. prices, are they going to go back up this summer? A lot of news came out earlier in the year and late last year that says watch out for the prices this summer. But is that actually going to be so?
Yeah, it's really interesting, because a lot of people saying we're looking at average airline ticket prices domestically of about $270. And some experts, including a number of different pundits that read the industry, are saying don't expect it to go up a lot. But what to look out for is the price of land, hotel, and other elements going up. Now, I agree, because we have seen that $1,000 used to get you in a 5-star top-end hotel a night, and that's gone up dramatically, especially in Europe and other places like that, especially with the Summer Olympics coming on. But my big concern is it's still fares are going up internationally dramatically over last year. We've seen it even recently.
We really have, especially with some group airfares and the airlines that we were using tried and true over the last few years. We've just seen a big hike, and we've had to look through two other airlines, and we've had lower rates. So it really does depend on the airline. It depends on the destination, and it depends on the route. But according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, airline ticket prices have now settled in around $270, which is not much more than the $250 pre-pandemic, but yes. 2022 prices rose to about $320. So $250, $320, I think at its peak, we were looking at about $400. But again, that's when I would say would probably in 2021, before everything kind of went back to what we will say normal in my air quotes here. But yes, you're right. Even I'm finding four-star hotels are pricing $300 to $500 per room per night, where that used to be the five-star hotel prices. And then your high ends, yes, are well over a grand a night. So we really have to be careful of what's in our bag. And if you're doing multiple things with your same travel bag, you may want to completely unpack it to make sure you know what's inside
of it. Turn it upside down and shake it to make sure there's nothing left in that bag.
Absolutely, yes. Because this couple, U.S. tourists, is now facing 12 years in prison after bringing ammunition to the Turks and Caicos Islands. An Oklahoma man faces up to 12 years in prison on the Caribbean island after customs officials found ammunition in his luggage. Ryan Watson traveled to Turks and Caicos with his wife to celebrate 40th birthday and along with two friends, but the vacation came to an abrupt end when they found ammunition in his carry-on luggage. He said that he was hunting prior to the trip and accidentally brought them with him, but strict laws in Turks and Caicos may still see a court imposing a mandatory 12-year sentence.
This is one of those instances where you should be double checking. I can't think of me going on a trip without checking my luggage beforehand, especially if I use that luggage to carry things like a weapon. And it is very clear. I mean, the U.S. government has made it very clear. If you bring firearm or ammunition into Turks and Caicos, the United States State Department is saying the embassy will not be able to secure your release from custody. And this couple, now I think the wife has had the charges against her dropped so she can go home because they have children. However, he is there. And while he's there on bail or whatever, he has to pay for accommodations and legal fees and everything else. And like you said, he's looking at 12 years and he's not the first American to be arrested for bringing in ammunition into the TC.
No, you're right. They originally charged both him and his wife, but since the bullets were only in his bag, they did drop the charges for her and she's home. And they're waiting and hoping for him to come home soon to see whether or not Turks and Caicos will really impose that 12-year sentence. But can you imagine if it applied to both of them and they have small children? So I certainly would recommend that if you do something like hunting or carrying weapons of any kind, have a bag exclusively for that and not one that you're going to be traveling with, because even residue. I remember one time I was traveling with my mom and she had a bag that she would normally put her lunch in.
That's right.
And the canine sat right next to her, you know, as they bring for agriculture as well. And they didn't find anything but the residue from the food she previously had stored in there. So yes, definitely be careful of what you're bringing. And I would highly recommend if you are a hunter or if you're using a bag for certain specific things, have a bag exclusively for that that you're not going to use for travel. When I come back, Jean and I will be talking about destinations and places that are here today, but may be gone tomorrow, or at least by 2050.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit TravelingCulturati.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. And joining me today is executive producer Jean Harley.
And now, Javon's Travel Minute.
You know, I came across this article and I thought, how brilliant of an idea. Never thought about it, but I'd like to share it with you in Javon's Travel Minute. And that is using Post-its in your passport to cover the pages and to ask the customs officials or the immigration officials not to stamp those pages. Why? Well, if you travel, you know that they stamp your pages. However, you also know that passport validity periods are, on average, 6 months beyond your date of travel. And in addition to that, many countries require one full blank visa page per passport or entry stamp. And some even ask for two fully blank pages. It used to be the four squares and they would just find a place anywhere they could stamp. But no, sometimes they will not even let you in if you don't have that completely blank page. So using that post-it note can ask them, place your stamp elsewhere. I need to save this page. And sometimes they will comply. Now, this doesn't mean that they will absolutely comply, but it may be some food for thought and it may help you save some pages. This is Javon, and that was your Travel Minute. You know, when I first started traveling, 40 years ago? Well, sooner than that, because I traveled in high school and my first trip was to Germany. But I remember the different places that I've been and some of the places I've returned to 20 and 30 years later, I've noticed a huge difference. Erosion, sometimes protections that destinations have imposed to protect against over-tourism. But that's exactly what we're talking about today. What's here today may be gone tomorrow, or at least by 2050. And what you'll soon find out today is that some, even by 2035, you're talking about 11 years from now. That's not too far from now. So, Gene, what kind of things have you seen over the decades of traveling?
Well, like you mentioned before, it's become a situation where the environment and also apathy from people or destructive nature of human beings themselves have made it harder for us to go to certain places and certain destinations. You remember, we used to be able to walk around and maybe not, we wouldn't touch, but look at things close up. Now they're being protected by gates. There are some places where you go where the water level is definitely higher than it was before, especially in the Caribbean and in places all across Southeast Asia and whatever places like that. And yeah, I can see that we are looking at a lot of destruction. And therefore, I think everybody ought to grab a pen and write down these places, because you've probably got 10 years for some of these destinations that you can still go to them.
Absolutely. I remember just in Egypt when we first went, they didn't have the plexiglass covering the hieroglyphics on the walls. But now they've had to, because people decided to write Jeremiah was here on hieroglyphics, these ancient walls.
So knowing that it can't be cleaned, right, and it can't be taken down. Even more importantly, just our breathing in some of the tomb areas is destroying the colors.
Yeah.
So they're limiting the number of tourists who can visit areas, and some of them are no longer available.
Here are some ways in which travel will change, or the way in which we vacation will change by 2050 due to the changes that are coming down the road. For example, heat. We have noticed a rise in temperatures across the globe and a shift in temperatures across the globe. And so these summer places that we have always loved to go to, Mediterranean Europe, for example, the Mediterranean has suffered some of the hottest summers, like Greece. Remember the wildfires in Greece in 2023?
All through the Mediterranean, these wildfires, Greece, Spain, Croatia, all of these countries are getting more and more wildfires, and it's there. But also the summer season, even if you want to go down to Australia, they're having more wildfires every year.
Yeah, they are. Mm-hmm. So how is that going to change? Well, it may mean that summer vacation doesn't mean Europe.
That's right.
Especially, it may not mean the southern parts of Europe or the Mediterranean. Yes. It may mean the northern parts of Europe. And northern European countries are already seeing a rise in tourism in the summer months. It could mean that we're visiting those destinations, the Mediterranean, in earlier months or later months. And I'm already seeing that happening now.
Yes.
But think about Costa del Sol. You're talking about Spain and Italy and Greece.
Mallorca. Yeah. The Greek islands. These used to be major summer vacation destinations. And the same thing is true in our hemisphere, Mexico and the Caribbean. They said in the next 20 years, Dallas and Southern will be over 100 degrees to 120 degrees in the summer months. I don't think too many people are going to enjoy that as a summer vacation.
No.
They're looking at Norway. They're going to be looking at Canada, the Great Lakes. They're going to be looking at Scandinavian countries and maybe even the Southern Hemisphere for our summer season, which will be their winter.
Another change is going to be what we covet, especially honeymooners and those over the water destinations or accommodations. So those overwaters may become underwaters. And unfortunately, on several of our lists today, you will hear the Maldives mentioned.
It's a shame because as we were talking earlier, the Maldives has only been a top destination for the last 30, 40 years. 50 years ago, nobody even knew about the Maldives. And like you said, many of those islands are sea level, and they're going to be gone in the next 30 years.
The whole marketing is really one island, one resort, certainly those over-the-water villas. And World Bank estimates that by 2050, 80% of the country will be entirely submerged. 80%.
So get to the Maldives. We'll talk about other destinations that are island destinations like that too. And as I said, get your list together because you may only have about 20, 50, 80%, which means in the next 10 years, 40% might be gone.
Now, for those who love the cities, and I do love the cities, I love the vacation in New York, Washington, D.C. I love our city here in Chicago. I love hanging out in a city, just everything that it has to offer. But a lot of times, you know, you do miss the greenery, but that's something that will change too. And this is a positive, really, because cities that will have higher temperatures, mainly because of lack of greenery, will start adding trees to the cities. And some cities have already started doing that, like Milan, for example. They have pledged to plant 3 million trees by 2030 to help tourists avoid the worst heat.
Yeah, and that's true. And many of the buildings in these areas are going green, not just in how they're doing their services and their utilities, but they're putting plants on the roofs and on the gardens and creating garden areas. I mean, even here in Chicago, the new plans for a possible new stadium includes a lot of green area.
Yeah, and I do like that. Residents are speaking out because, as you mentioned here in Chicago, when there's massive and big developments, people really do step up and say, we're also going to need some parks and we're also going to need some other things to balance some of those things, the high rises. Because we notice a difference in the temperature just where we are. That's about 10 degrees cooler than the lower parts of Michigan Avenue where we are, simply because of the buildings and the way that the wind goes through the buildings. So you'll definitely see that. Now, we were talking about destinations that are known for overwater villas and jokingly saying they'll be underwater, but that's not far from the truth. We're already seeing places like Dubai and Abu Dhabi building underwater accommodations, and so are some other destinations. So we may be looking to underwater instead of overwater.
And the sad fact is the effect has been so strong. Look at this month of April, Dubai flooding to the extreme that it looked like airplanes were landing in the river. I mean, because that's how much water was coming down. They're not equipped for it. These are desert locations that don't have the drainage and others. But this change and this rise in temperature, it affects everything. I mean, as a scuba diver, I'm dismayed at the fact that they're saying about 80, 90% of the coral reef around the world will be gone by 2050.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful aspect when you go scuba diving.
Yeah. When I had the gentleman on, professional diver who has taken dives around the world, he said somebody who's a first-time diver going in the Caribbean may be in awe of it. Mm-hmm. But for him, he's been diving for 40 years, and he sees the devastation of it.
Yes, everywhere.
And that there's not really much to see there, that you really have to go to some of these far-flung places to see beautiful coral reef because it's dying around the globe. But that is also impacting the balance of things. And it's also causing waters to rise because we're losing those natural barriers underground.
That's right. And that's causing flooding because the natural barriers of the reef are disappearing. Mm-hmm. And it's not just what you see in the coral, the life that lived in the coral, other than the coral reef, the fish and all the other animals that live there are gone. I mean, yeah, as a diver from 40 years ago, I can see the difference everywhere I go.
Now, while this is music to my ears, I can see the changes already happening. And I think that The pandemic had a big impact on travel insurance, but I think as we deal with climate change and more storms and more floods and more natural disasters, more people are buying travel insurance. And I think I've already seen the prices go up and they're going to continue to go up with so many occurrences. And we'll see where it goes. But travel insurance, more people are going to buy it and it could get pricier. But what do you think about Britain becoming the leading wine producer.
Wine tourism. I love that British vintage of wine. That's got to prove to you that global warming is something, because I'm not saying they weren't growing grapes in England and Britain, but to be it as a major wine producer means that they've moved, what is that, about 800, 1,000 miles north from the wine regions of France.
Well, all due to warmer temperatures. They're producing bottles of wine. They're producing wine because of the warmer weather. So yes, warmer weather could definitely bring more UK vineyards.
And you can look for more Washington State and Oregon and Michigan wines, Ohio wines, and even Vermont wines.
Yeah, definitely. And ski resorts will start to see more visitors during the summer. That's already happening too. So some of these things we're already seeing happening. They're just going to increase as time goes on. So I want to talk about some of these places that will disappear from the world map by 2050. We're talking about islands, mountains, corals, and cities. Some of them have already gone in the last 15 years or have greatly changed in the last 50 years. But yeah, this is what the experts are saying, that there are these islands that will completely disappear from the map. Some you may have heard of, some you may not have heard of. But for example, one of the top one on the list that could disappear by even 2030 is Majuli Island in India.
Wow. And you know, neither one of us have actually been there, but it was 1,200 square miles and it's less than 400 square miles. Two thirds of it has already disappeared due to flooding and the water running over. It was one of the largest river island and resort areas in India.
In the world.
It's disappearing. I mean, it's, in the world. 6 years from now.
Yeah, from 1,200 square kilometers to 400 square kilometers. That's major. Now, we talked about coral reefs and their importance underwater, but the Great Barrier Reef in Australia disappear by 2030. I remember visiting Australia for the first time, what was that, 15 years ago, and how they were talking then about the devastation and how the coral is just dying. It has decreased by more than 50% of its original size. Wow.
And it's bleached, and that is the largest coral barrier reef in the world. I mean, there's one in the Caribbean too, but that's the largest one in the world, and we're going to lose it in 6 years.
Oh, yeah. What's happening, if you've seen a coral reef before, a live one is vibrant, it moves, it's colorful. The Great Barrier Reef is turning white. Bleached, so when it dies, it just turns white.
It does. Yeah. And it's sad too, because it was so beautiful. I mean, those of us who've seen it in its prime, look at it today, it's sad.
And this 15
is happening all around the world to the reefs.
Yeah.
And those reefs are homes for life, and they also help against flooding.
Glacier National Park Montana. Again, by 2030, glaciers might not be here in the next 15 years. They have decreased from a huge 150 to 25. In the last 80 years.
Yeah, you can see the difference. I mean, you used to be able to see the glaciers and you could see the white caps, and it's not even white anymore.
Well, we've talked about the Maldives in the Indian Ocean, and they said it might disappear completely by 2035. As we mentioned earlier, that it could disappear or be covered in water by 80%, which is only going to leave 20% of the islands.
Yeah, it won't be habitable for tourism anymore.
It's the only country in the world with an average of 2.3 meters ground level and 1.4 meter above sea level. But yeah, in the next 20 years, it's not going to be here.
And that's a shame. The Maldives is a beautiful destination.
It is. What about the Great Wall of China?
Now, that's hard to think about from that standpoint, because it's been around, 2,000 years?
Mm-hmm.
And man, our encroachment on nature, pollution and everything else is going to take away something that you could see from space. And they said when? It's gone by when?
2035. This is due to over-farming and air pollution. Those are the main reasons.
It's been collapsing.
And it's not going to be completely gone, but it won't be what it was. And it'll basically be a site of ruins rather than what we've known it as.
Yeah, that's true of so many sites.
Snow-capped Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania.
It'll still be Mount Kilimanjaro, but it won't be snow-capped.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a hike, but you won't be hiking through snow. And already, you don't see the snow there in the summer anymore. We used to be able to see it when we went to Kenya and Tanzania.
Yeah, again, a big difference because it was one of our first trips that we did. And that was more than 30 years ago.
In the 80s.
But in the last 90 years, Kilimanjaro's ice sheet has reduced by 85%. Venice in Italy. Now, we've talked about Venice, and Venice has made a lot of changes. They're now starting to tax day tourists that are coming in because a lot of people come to Venice just for the day to see its beautiful canals and experience this. But the big cruise ships that are coming in, they're trying to limit those as well. But it's slowly submerging, and their canals are sinking. So the things that make them great are really becoming a major issue. So just think about no more gondola rides. One of the most romantic cities in the world.
It's just over-visited. And like you said before, you have giant cruise ships that are way too big driving in that waterway. And the water level goes up every time they come in. And flooding has been terrible. As you know, we've been there when they still have the tables out because there's been such flooding.
Bangladesh in Asia, a little bit longer, 2045, just a meter rise in sea level, and we could lose 50% of Bangladesh to water in the next 30 years. Now, an island that's always been exotic and a place that I've said I wanted to visit, and you don't quite know why, just because they have some odd creatures there, I think, and that's Madagascar.
I think because of the cartoon, too.
Could be.
But yes, I mean, one of the ones that we talk about all the time, the lemurs. They actually have species of animals in Madagascar that don't exist anywhere else. And they look similar, but they are a different species from mainland Africa because of the separation of Madagascar from main Africa millions of years ago. But it's an island, and it might be underwater by the time we get to 2045.
Well, it's also losing one of the big reasons that it may disappear also is because it's losing its forest, wildfires, and mass deforestations. The Alps in Europe. Folks, these are places that you know. We're not talking about obscure places. These are places that we know. The Alps in Europe could disappear by 2050.
This one of the ones that's already experiencing becoming a summer destination because the snow is just not there long enough for a winter destination.
Yeah, again, this has a lot to do with the global warming and the glaciers that are disappearing. South Australia by 2050. Dried up water resources. They're dealing with droughts and the landscape is threatened by it. North Africa, the Sahara Desert in North Africa disappear by 2050.
It's going to take over all of North Africa. I mean, it's expanding every year. You can see it when you visit.
The desert has grown 0.8 kilometers per month. 0.8 kilometer per month. And, you know, that's just dry desert. The Dead Sea bordering Israel and Jordan could be gone by 2050. The famous Salt Lake Dead Sea is known for its floating properties. Unfortunately, it has disappeared more than a third in the last 40 years. And reports believe that it would then be no more Dead Sea in the next 35 years.
Goodness.
Yeah. Northern tundra in Alaska. So we're dealing with the extremes of the hot and the cold is directly affected by climate change, but the Alaskan tundra is short-lived.
That's another one that we're going to miss.
But there's also some countries. We're talking about destinations, places that will disappear by 2050. What about entire countries that may disappear?
Yeah, and you talked about some of them. The first one that comes to mind, of course, is the Maldives. We've already talked about it numerous times. And it is not just an island resort area. It's an entire country.
Right.
And even the main island of Mala, the capital island, is pretty much at sea level. These are not mountainous islands, so that's disappearing. But look at one of our other favorite, the Seychelles.
Well, the sea level rise per year is 2.3 meters. Mm-hmm. 2.3. That's amazing. The Seychelles is also located in the Indian Ocean, and its serious threat when tides flooded in 2007 flooded the land up to 50 meters. And it is a beautiful place. In this vein, we are planning for 2025, the Seychelles. It is a beautiful place. You know, it is amazing.
I can't wait to get there. But it's sad to think that we might see it this time and the Seychelles we know may not be available in another 10 years.
Yeah.
Even the resorts.
Yeah.
And these are islands, but it really gets to be serious when you're talking about countries that are on continents or that are on peninsulas. And the next one, Vietnam.
I mean,
who would believe? But we talked about this in other places. As global warming and the water level increases from the melting of the ice caps, Vietnam is right out there on the edge, and only the most western part are mountainous. The rest of it is at sea level. So we're talking about losing Vietnam in the next 10 to 20 years also.
And that World Bank is warning that there's a potential temperature increase of over 3 degrees Celsius in Vietnam. Overall, Kiribati, the sea level is rising 1.4 meters. This is really alarming. Of course, most of these are island nations, but still, they're nations, they're countries. Samoa.
That one's really sad, but we've been hearing about that for the longest time. Remember, we were talking and learning about Samoa, and the people did not want to leave the island because 1,000 years of their ancestors are buried there, but the island is going underwater.
Yeah.
And their tradition doesn't allow them to pick up and move their family members, but they're going to be underwater. The graveyards are underwater.
Again, the warming of the ocean has significantly damaged the coral reefs around them, especially through coral bleaching. Tuvalu, also, you know, another island in the Pacific Ocean.
The South Pacific,
yes. Yeah, it's a very tiny island country, but it is greatly threatened by the effects of climate change. The highest point, just 4.6 meters above sea level.
And that's nothing. That's only 15 feet above sea level. That's a high point for that country. Okay, now this one is very sad because we love this country and we love its people. Fiji. Fiji is another one that might disappear by the time we get to 2050. And we know why. It's very low level.
Yeah.
Flooding is already taking place there. And it's being over-tourist. And I'm happy we're going back there again next year because I don't want to say goodbye to Fiji.
No, it's such a beautiful place. But yeah, the topography is very nice there. But unfortunately, part of that topography is, as you mentioned, low-lying. And remember, one of the places that we went to, we had to take one of the smaller boats, and then we couldn't come all the way ashore. We had to kind of get off and walk, but the water was around just above our ankle as we were walking ashore.
That's right.
Interesting.
We could see there that the water level had moved up to where the trees were at different times.
Yeah.
Most of these destinations are in the South Pacific, and I think that's where it's going to be the harshest.
Certainly, Vanuatu, the Marshall Islands, and the Solomon Islands.
Yes.
So you're talking about either the Pacific Ocean or the Indian Ocean. And a lot of these are island nations. And again, really because of the loss of the coral reefs and their protections and the rising temperatures that are really impacting everything. So climate change is the most pressing global change issue right now with today's topic of what we're talking about here today and gone tomorrow. And it's very sad because, again, we're talking about major places and iconic places and landmarks and like the Great Wall of China or Venice, and how differently we're going to vacation. Summer destinations may become winter destinations, mm-hmm. or we may go further north for warmer destinations. Overwater may be underwater. Yes. All of these things. There are some leaders in contributions as far as emissions are concerned. And so you may be wondering, what can I do or what do I need to pay attention to? And that's basically it. Emissions, greenhouse gases, how we exist in this world.
What we do, how we live, what we eat has an effect on the climate. Yes, it's cyclical. We do have ice ages, warm spell, cold spells every 10, 14, 20,000 years. However, we have sped up this one currently, and this one's going to be devastating. We're looking at the loss of not just land, but loss of all kinds of animals. We're looking at another extinction horizon possibility. So we need to control our greenhouse gases. And it's not just cars and travel and everything like that. The food we eat, I mean, cattle put off more greenhouse gases than anything else, but we want to eat. So we basically keep breeding in there. We have more cows than we have people. We have more sheep than we have people. We have more pigs than we have people. All of them put off greenhouse gases.
And it's not just a foreign issue. The United States in particular has faced a considerable economic impact due to weather and climate related disasters, with losses exceeding $617 billion between 2018 and 2022. And in 2022, the economic costs surpassed $176 billion alone, leading to challenges for 13% of Americans who reported economic difficulties because of harsh weather events. So it's a big price tag as well.
We're paying for it. The disasters that we have, look at the most recent ones, just in the last 10, 15 years, New Orleans, Hawaii. These are devastating ones. These are here in the United States, and these are things that we're going to have to deal with continuously. It's not going to just disappear.
Right. Those hurricanes that we're getting off the coasts of, like, the Carolinas
That's right. The
Gulf of Mexico are because they have lost those wetlands that used to protect them.
The flooding that comes from them.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
So, Florida, the Carolinas, the Gulf of Mexico, it's going to continue if we don't take steps now. And we keep eliminating the things that have been protecting us as human beings for 200,000 years.
Well, Gene, thank you so much for joining me today. And such an important topic, and I hope it hits home for a lot of us, places that you've visited, countries that you've visited, landmarks, things that you've enjoyed in travel, just knowing that, especially for your children or your grandchildren, that they may not be here. Just some food for thought.
So do what you can to make a positive change, folks.
When I come back, I'll have the culture report.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Once again, make sure you head on over to the website and join the Travel Club. Go to travelingculturati.com. We go to some fantastic places, and you don't want to miss out. Culture is forever changing and reflecting what's happening in the society and with its people. It can be born of the arts, music, food, and sometimes politics and strife. This is the Culture Report, and we're talking about food, of course, today. And one of my favorite places and one of the most talked about dining experiences that our groups have ever had, on the phone with me is Chef Ruby. Hello, Chef Ruby, and welcome to Traveling Culturati.
Hello. Hello, Traveling Culturati. This is amazing. Amazing.
Well, I can only tell you that I have been very jealous and envious when my groups return, especially the ones that I have not traveled with from Ghana, and they just rave about the experience that they had with you. Now, I have to tell you all that Chef Ruby is a professional chef who, for the past 30 years, perfected her culinary skills and worked with several major international brands, clients, and individuals, and our groups have been one of them. So, you know, again, I've just heard so many wonderful things about you. So with the honor and pleasure that we've had with experiencing your authentic culinary delights with our groups in Ghana, I'm hoping to be on the next one.
Oh, we look forward to welcoming you. We call ourselves the food people for a reason. If you have the love of food, then you're in the right company. We will do anything to have the most amazing experience with food, because that is truly the one thing that we cannot do without as human beings. And considering that you have to have a meal every day, it has to be something amazing, something that is memorable. So, you know, we have been blessed to have a family of people that love food. And it is very easy for us to, you know, with our bellies full, to be able to talk about absolutely anything and everything. So we look forward to seeing you here in Ghana.
And we are looking forward to seeing you as well. So what sparked your passion for cooking?
I come from a family of foodies. Like, you know, my grandmother, my mom, my aunties, they all love food. We are the type of people that we never kind of like went takeaway people. Every day we cooked. My grandmother made jams. I remember that when it was like my fourth birthday, my grandmother gifted me this little toy cooking utensils, and she used to make this amazing pineapple jam, which we actually got now as a production ongoing coming up in July. And, you know, it will make the most amazing sourdough bread. We toasted on actual charcoal, like you're barbecuing this bread. So I've always come, you know, around food. Very earlier on, at the age of 15, 16, I knew what I wanted to do. It was food. There was no question. There was, for me, my purpose, my being is food. I've never had anything that says, oh, no, maybe I want to go and do this. I think food has always been the thing that I want to exploit. I've gone as far as, I've lived in London for over 30 years. I've gone as far as going to school from the age of 15, 16 to from college to several university degrees, to even as far as doing food science to really understand the science of cooking. So unfortunately for me, it's an addiction.
Well, I'm in that boat as well. I absolutely love food. So as we are called foodies, or as you say, food people.
People of food.
I loved reading about your memory of your grandma. Can you share that with us, that your food experience with your grandmother?
My grandmother was a queen mother. He was married to a king. And she was very old when I was 4, because even 3 years ago, she passed away and she was 112. So This is a very old woman, very beautiful skin, everything, but just loved to spend the time with the grandchildren. And I was happy to be blessed to be one of those. My grandmother's house was like the one that all my mom, my aunties, all their kids kind of grouped. My grandmother was the type of person that all her children, go and have your career. She took the grandmother, grandfather, my grandfather the same, very serious. So we were blessed to have this very amazing, very smallish person, very strong, ate very fresh. I mean, my aunties would make food and my grandmother would be like, no, the food is not cooked enough. It's not well done and things like that. So we were privileged to be around food that was fresh. Fresh was key. She was a farmer. She was also did a bit of like egg farming, some beads, very interesting lady. So being around her, you realize that, you know, you're not going to be hungry. You're definitely going to be served right. And she believed in the old fashioned training of girls need to really know what they're doing in the kitchen and things like that. And what I remember even more important about my grandmother, she was extremely patient woman. And never have I seen my grandmother angry or anything like that. She was always able to win us with food, different textures. I think to me, I would say that she was a chef herself. And she had that opportunity with all her 6 generations that she managed to bring to the world to really have some impact onto the family. So in that case, when we as a family, we get together, it's food that bonds us, you know, different type of food. I remember she having this beautiful garden egg stew that even my uncles will come in and get her to make it so they would take it to their wives and things like that. So for me, it was always, you don't have to go outside. She always preached that, you know, outside people are not hygienic enough to cook food that you have to have as a family. So we were always like, okay, we still want to eat the things on the street, but then she would like, you know, let's experiment. Let's do this to it. Very interesting woman. And obviously with me, my parents moved to England. We were raised there in England. And my mother and father carried this tradition together as a family, being able to eat at a table. So from very early on, this culture around me just became a part of me so much. And I was always curious, why is this with that? What is that with that? And I was a bit fussy with, oh, this is not hygienic. If I want to make a jam, I want to know what is in it. I don't want chemicals. So that kind of sparkle, that type of behavior, that made it very addictive. So I'm like, oh, I want to make something that's really good. So I have this motto that I've always said to my kids. I'm like, if I cannot make it better, then I have to buy the best, literally. And so we will make anything from sourdough to cakes to whatever. And equally, we will be like, okay, you know, these people, like we will go to Paris and we will just go and eat pastries because they make the amazing pastry. We will do a 2-day transit just to eat this pastry. That's what I say. This thing is a disease for me. I find food so fascinating. I find that it breaks the hardest of conversations. I've had people that have gone into a meeting very harsh, and we have made meals for them. They come out and the clients will be like, yeah, it went good. It went good. Also, there's one thing that we are every day putting in us. So we need to make sure that it's fitting for the body and the mind. That is how I see food. I see it as something that it is a part of us, and we must know what we put in us, what we put in our body, what we use our hands and mouth to put in our body. So I've been blessed to be trained in lots of really great places. And I've had a career from all the way from the best employee from the Hilton Groups to the Dorchesters to the BBCs, to work for Princess Diana, to go to places like the Restaurant Associates of this world, being able to be a food and a business development for quite a lot of several businesses and help them to open restaurants and things like that. So for me, this is a labor of love. I treat every ingredient with that in mind, really.
It certainly sounds like your grandmother passed on to you that passion for life and the longevity. Oh my goodness, she lived to be 112. How wonderful is that? But also helping to give you that space to find your path in the world and to be a part of that is such a wonderful, wonderful story. So what was your journey back home to Ghana from London?
So about 8 years ago, my father, who struggled a little bit and at the age of 70 with a heart condition and passed away. My father was also quite a very traditional person, always wanted us to kind of come back to Ghana and, you know, sort of live. And after a year when he passed, I came to Ghana because he wanted to be buried in Ghana. So we came to bury him when he was, obviously he passed. A year later, I came to Ghana, and out of curiosity, I was like, you know, I would like to just eat in as many restaurants. I did a little bit of research as possible to see what the food scene is like here. Because at the time, so I came back, my grandmother was quite old, and I've always sort of made a promise to myself that I would take care of her when she's in her old age. Even though, you know, most people in my family are fighting to do that anyway. So at the time I did that, went around the country, ate as many restaurants as I can. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, we don't really have the best of the fine dining in the country, the one that I was used to doing in London. It fascinated me, you know, restaurants that people thought it was the top of the range. I was like, really? Is this the top of the range? Then we're a bit behind. So luckily for me, I met a friend of mine who had sort of a boutique hotel, asked me to do some guest chef in the country for her. And it went viral. It was quite good. They offered me some opportunity to come and develop their products there, which I managed to do with one of the top restaurants in Ghana at the time. So for me, it was a journey. One was to really just come and spend some time with my grandmother. Second, while I'm there, I need to work. And then I found some interesting things to do. But during the COVID time, it was like, oh, there's certain part of things I want to do. I wanted that independent, you know, COVID made you think like, you know, now or never, you know, all these ideas you've had, you're going to do it now, you're never going to do it. So it was like, you know, people were scared, they were at home. I said, you know what? This is the time that people have got together with their families. They want to spend quality time. So I created this company that we initially was like, oh, fine dining on wheels. We'll come and do some bit of, you know, special birthdays. Then people just kind of got to know. They started calling me. I remember getting COVID-19 vaccinated, and we would be going to people somewhere they trusted us to kind of do meals for them. And then it just became something that everybody looked forward to. And that was the beginning on the birth of the food people. It was really about certain people that used to love my restaurants and wanted the same food there. And they just followed me everywhere. They carried me with them.
We'll have more with Chef Ruby next week.
Ladies and gentlemen.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.